1450 WKXL on the AM dial, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM, our brand new signal in Manchester, booming into downtown Manchester right now, even as we speak. It is In Touch with Kaylin Cormier. Good afternoon, Jane.
Hello, Ken. How are you?
Or I might say good morning, depending on when people are hearing this
program. Afternoon works.
But
morning,
it's great to have you with us, as always.
Thank you.
And joining us today is our very special guest, Amanda Grapponi-Osmer. And Amanda, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And Amanda is a fourth generation member of the Grapponi family as far as their automobiles are concerned, and certainly probably the most famous automobile dealership in all of New Hampshire.
In all of Bow, for sure.
In all of Bow, for sure. Beautiful Bow Junction.
That's right.
Where Grapponi is located. And it's so great to have you with us. You grew up in the automotive industry.
I did.
You've seen a lot of changes over the years.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to. You probably knew my grandfather, John, back in the good old days. When I have a great recording, by the way, of him at this station talking about, he's probably closing in on 80 when he did this interview. And I found it recently, and I'd forgotten that I had it.
Wow.
And I'm just so grateful to whoever at KXL put that together, because it was this whole series on, it's called Coming to America. It was immigrants who came here, started businesses, and things like that. So some really awesome stories that I had not heard before, and it was just really nice. So whenever I think of KXL, I think
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I hadn't heard his voice since he passed away. It was the weirdest thing. I was like, whoa, he's still the same old funny little Italian guy.
What did you have it on?
I have it on a CD. Yeah. And we moved last year, and it made it through the move, and it just surfaced. You know, sometimes things just kind of pop up when they're supposed to. Like a book you've had forever, and all of a sudden you notice it, and it's always been there, but there it is even more obviously. Yeah, so which is timely because I'm working on a book for our 100th anniversary, which is in 2 years. So I those little stories will certainly make it into the book. So
for those not familiar, how did it all begin?
My great-grandparents, Rocco and Emanuela Grapponi, came from Italy separately, though, not together. He was late 1800s, and she was right around 1900. And the story I've heard, anyway, is that it was an arranged marriage. I actually never got to meet them. They had passed away before I was born. But they had seven surviving children, and one of them was my grandfather, John, and he had three brothers and two sisters. Does that math work? Four, five, six, seven. There were four boys and three girls. Three brothers, yes. And so at some point or another, all the kids were involved in helping to just keep the gas station running, because in 1924, they opened up a gas station, which was kind of the beginning of what we now call Grapponi Automotive. And then 25, they started selling Oldsmobiles, and then from there they went on to sell all kinds of different makes, that most of which don't exist anymore. Viking, DeSoto, Plymouth, we have quite a rich history, but I'm really enjoying digging a little bit deeper and trying to figure out what are the pieces of the story that maybe I hadn't heard, and you know, are there any things that I like, fun stories that I can tell that maybe I wouldn't have with other people still alive, but just try to paint the picture of a family business. So they, Rocco, my great grandfather, was in the stone carving trade, and so kind of followed wherever the granite was. He started in New York, moved up to Barre, Vermont, and then came down to New Hampshire and worked in both Milford and then the quarry here in Concord at Swenson Granite Quarry. So then his wife, my great-grandmother, decided, I guess, that it was too dangerous of a line of work, and his silicosis is a disease that stone carvers would get. It was just inhaling all of the fine dust that got kicked up when they carved the headstones, and it could fill their lungs and kill them. So she was concerned that they needed a different way to supplement the family income. So she and two of her daughters worked at New England Cable Company, I think. It's in the Ralph Pill building, I believe. It's where it used to be. And they actually made wires for Ford Motor Company. So this is well before we were a Ford dealer, because this would have been in the teens, I think, around 1920 or so. And we became a Ford dealer in 58. So I actually got to tell that story to Elena Ford, who's Henry's great-great-granddaughter. I work on a kind of a committee with her. It's like a dealer advisement committee. It's part of a global thing I do with Ford, and she came to visit Grapponi Ford recently, so I got to actually tell her that whole story about how her family business allowed us to make enough money to start the gas station, which turned into our family business. Wow. So it's just a really neat story.
Yeah. That is so cool.
It's a great history.
No kidding.
It really is. And it continues to this day, obviously. And congratulations to you. I know you were recently honored by the New Hampshire Business Review.
Oh, thanks.
As an influential retail leader in their New Hampshire 200 list.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on that. And you've had so many awards, so we could sit here for the next hour and just talk about the awards that you and your family have won over the years. But one of the things that stands out, I think, about the Grapponis and always has is their philanthropy and how involved in so many charities that you are. And I guess two of your recent initiatives are the Dewey School at Canterbury Shaker Village and Take the Wheel New Hampshire.
Yes. Yep. Two very different but really very special programs to me. And the first one, the Dewey School, which is for those people who are local to Concord who went to Dewey School, which I did back in the day as a kid. It's not named Dewey because of that, although I have great memories from the cakewalks in the basement of Dewey School. People remember cakewalks. I'm aging myself a little bit. But no, Dewey was actually the name of the Shakers, one of their favorite pets. They loved pets. And they had a dog named Dewey who was a gift to them back in 1920. Yeah. So Dewey just had his 100th birthday last year. But Dewey, if you go to the Dewey School, the first thing when you walk in to see were their kids' cubbies and you know, things, coats hanging and that kind of a thing, and their mats that they sleep on in the afternoon, and then a big picture of Dewey the dog. So anyway, so it's a nature-based preschool, which is really, really neat and serves, I think, a great need. And I won't even say I think, I know it does, because in our third year of operation, we went from 16 kids the first year, we're at 39 this year, and we have 45 on the wait list.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
So it's as you mentioned, it's at Canterbury Shaker Village, so not, you know, centrally located for the easiest commute from certain places,
right.
But we get kids from Bow to Bristol to Hooksett and all over the place. Yeah, so it's really cool because the kids have an opportunity to be outside for every day, pretty much. The only thing that keeps us in is really high wind. Other than that, though, I mean, their kids are tough, as you know. As we say at the Dewey School, there's no bad weather. There's just bad clothing.
There you go.
As long as you have the right outfit, you too can be outside. And they have, their playground is literally almost 700 acres of fields and forests.
Isn't that awesome?
It's the best. Yeah. It is really the best. So the age group we serve is 3 years, 9 months, up to six-year-olds.
How old is it?
We just started it. This is our third school year, so we've never had a non-COVID school year, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. That is tough. Huh?
It is rough. Our executive director has done an amazing job of just keeping it all together and, you know, being prepared in the eventuality that we have an outbreak or things like that. But it's the community of parents is really strong, too. So it's been a really special endeavor. And it's just, I very much wish that it's something that we're close enough to work that I could have our team members' kids there. But it just, the way it worked out, it's a little bit far afield. Just the way it worked out, you know, we're serving a lot of families and a lot of kids, but they don't happen to be.
So what's the philosophy specifically of that school?
Yeah.
And you said it's outside a lot.
Yeah, it's Reggio Emilia. So if you're familiar with them, a lot of people have heard of Montessori. It's not the same, but it's in the vein of what you might imagine. It's an Italian, Reggio, just as you know, meaning region in Italian. So it's from the Emilia region of Italy.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, so basically it's, you know, we consider kids to be competent, capable human beings. And the environment is the third teacher. So there's the child and the teacher and then the environment. And so the kind of cool thing about that is that if you have kids with wildly different interests, one might just want to stop and stare at a frog. And then you can turn your lesson into whatever that becomes.
If it's
biology or art. Or art is a big focus for us, too. So they express themselves through art quite a bit. Or, you know, you have another kid who just wants to run wild. And so let them go. Yeah. It's just a beautiful thing seeing kids in nature. Yeah. And I was on the Shaker Village board for quite a long time, and I still serve as a corporator on the Shaker Village board. I lived in Canterbury for 15 years before moving last year. And to me, it's like the perfect marriage of, we lease the space from the Shaker Village, but we're a separate standalone 501c3. But it's just a perfect marriage between allowing Shaker Village to have some life breathed back into it while also letting new people discover, you know, this place is wonderful and my kid gets to actually grow up here, which the Shakers would have loved. And I think they're very misunderstood. If you don't know much about the Shakers, it's it's easy enough to cast them as, well, they're near extinct celibate society that hasn't accepted new members in 40 years or something. Mm-hmm. So, like, what's the story there? What's interesting about that? But they loved children. They really did. And if you've ever had a tour at the Shaker Village, you know, they, the whole schoolhouse, that was there for a reason. They prized education. They separated the boys and girls seasonally. And the girls would be doing their, I'm assuming, yeah, wintertime work would make sense for the girls. Mm-hmm. And then the boys in the summer would be out haying and milking the cows and doing all that. So,
Cool.
So it's an amazing backdrop. I mean, the kids can learn everything from ecology to commerce, you know, like growing their own. They have a little garden. They've got some chickens there. They sell the eggs that the chickens make so that they help pay for some of their school supplies.
That's
and it's just
great.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like how I really wish that all kids could grow up.
Yes.
And it's a reality now. So it's, I'm pretty proud of that. It's cool, cool school.
Wow. That is terrific and open to everyone.
It is. Yeah. I mean, obviously, with the wait list, we can only grow as quickly as we can grow. Yeah. And we want to keep it a close, tight-knit community. We don't want everybody to, you know, we want to serve as many people as we can, but not at the cost of what the experience is for the
Absolutely.
Families.
Yeah. You're still brand new.
We are. We are a startup, as I like to remind. And I have a wonderful board. You know, we have, I was the chair for a little while, and I just stepped down from that because I've got some more work kind of responsibilities that I should probably focus on right now. So I did find a great chair to replace me, and I'm still on the board as a non-voting member, but
And what about the other one that we mentioned, Take the Wheel, New Hampshire?
That's a wonderful program. So people who have been around New Hampshire for a while may be familiar with the More Than Wheels program or Bonnie Clack, which was the name, the predecessor to More Than Wheels. And those programs, unfortunately, don't exist anymore. And it's similar to those programs. But basically what we're doing is trying to target people who are, you know, they're working. They are in need of a vehicle, whether it's because theirs is aged or it needs a lot of work or they don't have one at all. We just put a gentleman in a vehicle who had been biking to work for years. He's in his mid-50s. So that actually came out of a conversation with Carmen Lorenz, who runs up in the Lakes Region. She runs Lakes Region Community Developers. I always want to say Lakes Region Conservation, which is another great group, but Lakes Region Community Developers. So she's focused on affordable housing. And so she and I, we knew each other through a couple of different things. And we had lunch one day, and it was like the fateful burrito. We talk about the burrito lunch that we had. And we were just like, how do we help her clients who sometimes they just can't get to work because their cars don't work, or they can't get their kids to the appointments? Or maybe someone's nice and donates them a car, but it's so old with so many problems that it doesn't actually help them because now they have a different set of problems to deal with. So we just got to brainstorming, and it turned out we've been working on this for probably 3 years now. We had 160 people apply to the program this year. So it's there's definitely a need and an interest out there. But the short version is that the clients, initially, we were trying to serve just Carmen, the clients of Carmen's organization, because we figured they've already been vetted by you because you had to get them into housing. So they've demonstrated that they are responsible enough to pay bills, they're working, that kind of thing. And so part of what I wanted to help do is relieve that burden of someone who's got either no credit or poor credit, relieve them from having to constantly prove themselves, so to speak, and in like that. You know, not that it's, I don't want to say it's humiliating, but I really feel like at some point you start to feel a little bit less than because people constantly are just questioning, are you worthy? So how do we remove that toxic stress? For me, like if I could do one thing in my life, it would just be to combat toxic stress because I see what it does, how it undoes people. Mm-hmm. And especially the kids who, you know, they don't choose to have the toxic stress, but they don't have a choice but to participate in it. So we got together and we decided to let's expand it rather than just her clientele. Let's offer it up to basically anybody in the Lakes region. And we kind of expanded it to central New Hampshire. The reason being that that's more or less the footprint for Franklin Savings Bank, who's the other key partner in this program. So as one example, we were able to reduce one woman recently who came to us, reduce her monthly interest rate from 23% down to 4%. Yes. And the really beautiful thing about this is that the financial literacy training that happens through Carmen's organization, they use somebody called Home Team. Paul McLaughlin out of Home Team does a terrific job with his clients. And they really do help people to understand, like, the cost of ownership of a car. It's not just a monthly payment. You obviously have to deal with insuring it mm-hmm. and registering it and paying gas. And so we really don't want to set anybody up for failure. So they go through a pretty rigorous program of financial literacy, which can take months to complete. And there's a high defection rate at this. We're looking at why, you know, and I think a lot of it is just when COVID hit, people who had jobs didn't have them anymore. So mm-hmm. that kind of pulled them out of the program.
Yeah.
But anyway, having said that, we have had a lot of interest. We currently have 10 people in the program. So we're hoping in the next few months that we'll get them into cars
awesome.
As well. So how it works is that somebody applies to the program, and it's takethewheelnh.com or org. I can't remember. I think it's .com. But anyway, take the wheel on H. I'll get you there. And you can apply for the program, complete all of the training, and then Groponi will get you either a brand new or a late model used car that is within the budget that you and your coach have talked about. And then Franklin Savings Bank, rather than do the, you know, the classic run the credit, yeah. put someone in a bucket based on their credit experience, they actually use the vetting process of the financial literacy training as basically character reference. So they don't run the credit. They don't base anything on the credit. They just say, you're a graduate of this program, therefore we trust that you're going to make good on your loan.
Awesome. What a terrific program. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, and I feel like there's a lot of momentum just behind it. And as soon as we kind of, of course, now that we are starting to get more people through the program, there's the situation with almost no inventory. So that's been a little bit of an issue. But, you know, every one really key important thing, and anybody who's listening who wants to get involved in processes like this that involve multiple stakeholders like the bank and us and Carmen's group, I would say that the most important thing to keep in mind is that everybody's situation is very individual.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to build in that kind of latitude or flexibility that I might have a single mom with three kids or someone who's not married or like the gentleman with the bicycle who he had zero credit history. So how do you even start? You can't have one set of rules for this program and allow it to try to apply to everybody you're helping. So we have, I think, why it's successful is that all of us who came to the table, Ron Magoon at Franklin Savings and Carmen and me, we said right off the bat, like, we are here to help people succeed. And if something's going to set them up to fail, we don't want that in our program.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. So it and it doesn't cost you anything to be flexible. You know, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about once you can find like-minded organizations or business people to get involved in an important project like this. You know, as long as everybody's willing to take a little bit of the risk, it spreads it out enough so that personally, I would say this is how I describe the program. There are enough of us taking a small amount of risk that none of us has to take a huge risk and therefore have to walk away from it because, you know, Groponi couldn't afford it. We don't do that. I mean, we can fill out all the paperwork, but we don't do the actual funding. We're not a funding source.
Right.
So Ron and his team have come in and stepped in to do that. So it's just been a great partnership. I was frustrated early on that we weren't able to get it off the ground sooner, but good things take time. So
absolutely. So and now it's been a crazy world these past.
It really has. Sometimes I give myself a little bit of grace because I'm like, okay, there are a few other things going on.
Yeah, just
too.
A few.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a used car, and there has been some talk about the used car market, and how does it stand these days?
Bananas is what it is.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I talked to somebody yesterday. He came to do a quote to remove some trees, and he had a work truck that so compounded by the fact that he can't hire anybody to actually work at his tree removal service. He has 9 trucks, but only 3 human beings to run them.
Boy.
So he has started selling off some of his equipment, which is sad in a way because of obviously long-term planning. But in the short term, he made more trading his truck in than he paid for it 2 years ago after putting something like 20,000 miles on it.
Wow.
So it is that crazy right now. Yeah, if anybody, please, anybody listening who has a car that they don't use very often, sell it right now. You will never, ever get more money than right now for your car. It's just nuts.
And why is that? Is just inventory so low?
Yes. So the shortage of new car inventory directly impacts the used car market as well. So each one's kind of a barometer for the other.
Okay.
And there's huge pent-up demand right now because there are so many millions fewer cars being produced. There's no less demand. There's way less supply. So it's economics 101. I mean, we are selling cars, new cars at MSRP. Every single car that we have, other than we have some Mazdas that are slightly marked down. But every single new car that we have is MSRP. And most dealers right now are doing this market adjustment thing where they'll slap another few thousand dollars on top just because they can. Mm-hmm. We decided very early on, though, it's like, that's just not a game we want to play. You know, my philosophy is just that people are not accustomed to paying MSRP for a car. So the delta between what you're used to paying and MSRP, to me, this is a personal philosophy, it's already big enough. I don't need to be slapping thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could. We could be making a huge amount of money off of that right now. But it's just, we feel like it's a long game. We've been here 97 years. Mm-hmm. I want, if my kids run it someday, I want them to come into the showroom and tell them stories about, I remember when your mom didn't overcharge when she could have. Right. Like, honestly, that's good. Because I guess I live on this spectrum of I'm not the beginning of this business, and I hope I'm not the end of it. And mm-hmm. I got to think in equal parts about all the people who worked hard to get us here and also the people who hopefully will work hard to keep it going when I'm long after I'm gone. Yeah. So it just changes my perspective, I think.
Sure.
Our guest today is Amanda Osmer, and we'll be continuing with this conversation in just a moment, but we have to take a break here on 1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 FM in the Concord area, and 101.9 FM, our new signal in Manchester. It's In Touch with Kaelin Cormier. Welcome back, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in Manchester. It is In Touch with Kaelin Cormier, and our guest today is Amanda Osmer. We've been talking about the great philanthropic work of the Grapponi Automotive Group, and they've been doing such great philanthropy over the years and selling a lot of cars as well, as people well know in this area at Bow Junction. And Amanda, very much involved for a long time. And you really changed the way the company did business.
On the sales side, yeah. We had a pretty massive change to how we sell cars back in 2013. And that was, in pretty quick succession, we took a look at our mission statement. We rewrote it as a group, and we involved a lot of probably 70 mid-level managers from the company or so to help us really craft, like, what is it that Grapponi means to people? What does it feel like? And we have so much long-term service to our company that it was really valuable to ask our team members. We did it Sunday. We're closed on Sundays, so we took the opportunity to do, like, a day-long retreat with them. And we had all kinds of different fun things that we did. But then at the end of the day, we said, all right, guys, help us understand what Grapponi means to you, because so many of us have been there. I've been there 25 years now. So at the time, back in 2013, I won't do math on the fly, but it had been a hot minute. So I'd been there for a little while. And we had folks in the room who'd been there 15, 20, 30 years. And we said, okay, here are as many sticky notes as you want. Put a word or a short phrase on these sticky notes individually and just throw them up on the wall and see what we come away with. And so hundreds and hundreds of sticky notes were up on this wall. So after everybody left, we grouped them into like categories. And really what jumped out at us is there were truly only three messages out of all of those sticky notes. And they happened to be integrity, kindness, and respect. So that was the sort of the seed for our mission statement. And then the rest of it came from me ripping off Southwest Airlines, because I figured they probably spent a bajillion dollars doing the research, so why not? And so actually, what I took from them was dedication to. And so that's how our mission statement starts. It's Grapponi, the mission of Grapponi Automotive is dedication to building lifelong relationships with our team members, our guests, and our community by serving with integrity, kindness, and respect. So that's where all those all those descriptive words came in. And then really importantly to us, the team member comes first, and that is, boy, has that been true during COVID, and just being able to share in our success from this year with team member bonuses and all the things that we try to do to really celebrate the fact that we just honor the person who shows up to do the work. Mm-hmm. It's retail's a grind, let's just face it. And retail during a pandemic is a double grind. So we have a lot of fun at work. One of my barometers is if someone who's never been to Grapponi comes to meet me, my barometer is if they say, everyone here is so happy, which they pretty much do every single time. Like even people delivering lunch and dropping off food, mm-hmm. and the DoorDash guy is like, why is everyone so happy here? Because we want them to be. You know, we make a concerted effort to take care of our team, because then it translates, and you both have been guests of ours, and I appreciate mm-hmm. that. So, you know, you hopefully get to feel the benefits of that. So I that's kind of my calling, and my job has just been to try to remove barriers that get in the way of people reaching their potential. And that's where I have the most fun.
That's awesome. So the way that you sell, for those that might not be educated about that, what makes Groponi different in that regard?
You're very good about getting me back on track. Thank you. So like, no one asked about your mission statement. So this is how we're different. We price our vehicles in a way that we feel is fair based on what the market is doing. And if you go online to Groponi.com, that price is the same price as when you walk through the door. So we've taken out the back and forth, the negotiating process, the let me ask my manager, the blah, blah, blah.
Which is so stressful.
I know. Talk about it. I was like, I told my dad early on, I'm like, Dad, I'll do anything, but please don't put me in sales. And of course, I became the director of sales. But over the years, I kind of, along the way, picked up the things that I knew I didn't want to have part of the process anymore, as well as the stuff that, having worked at a Lexus dealer out in California for a couple of years, I picked up some things that I did like and I did want to emulate. So I had the opportunity to lead the team through that change so that we no longer negotiate and our team members are paid. It's a volume-based pay plan, and they're also covered with basically a safety net. If they don't sell anything, they're still paid. I think it's $18 an hour. So the thinking there is that, you know, we, because of our reputation, our location, the brands we sell, all these things, you should be able to earn well in excess of $18 an hour. But if life happens to you, which it happens to all of us, and for a couple weeks you have a horrible dry spell and you sell nothing, you're still getting paid.
You still get a check.
Yeah, that's a really, and we pay every Friday, which I feel like that's something that they will, my team will never let us not do.
Yes.
Once you have a Friday paycheck, you know, every week, it's hard to get away from.
But, yes.
But yeah, that's just, there are a lot of little things that we try to do to just help people understand, like, your family matters, you matter, your mental health matters to us. And the up and down is as exhilarating as straight commission can be. Believe me, I was straight commission at a car dealership in San Francisco, and my rent, and this is 20 years ago, and my rent was $1,600 then for to live by myself. Yeah, and there was a lot of pressure, you know, like you might do and say things that you wouldn't normally do, because guess what, your face, you know, the nameless, faceless person who owns your apartment building in San Francisco sure doesn't care.
That's right.
If you can't make your rent. So I think they're having, that was a really formative experience for me, going out working. It was a Sonic automotive store, so it was a publicly exchanged auto group, and they still exist. They have couple hundred dealerships, I think, across the U.S.
Wow.
So working for them and then working for my own family business, I really got the benefit of understanding what it means to be a number versus what it means to be a human.
Makes a big difference to the folks coming in the door.
So much. It really does. Yeah.
It really does, because, you know, so many find the, you know, the automotive, when you walk into a dealership, you find it a very intimidating experience sometimes.
Yes.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
No matter how much they think they may know about cars and that sort of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But especially if you don't know a whole lot.
Indeed.
It feels intimidating to some, but you don't get that feeling at Groponi. You really don't.
Well, after four generations, you get it right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took a bit, but I figured it out. No, I have to say, my grandfather, I call him the blueprint, because I feel like just all the foundational things that I still use every single day, I absolutely know I got from just watching him. And, you know, when he was alive, I was like, oh, here comes another bad joke that I've heard 100 times. But now, of course, I miss that.
That's right.
And that was so much part of his charm, was so much a part of what he did, and just being able to connect to people on a very real level and sit in the service department and just watch the Red Sox game on a Saturday afternoon.
Isn't that nice, huh?
Yeah, it's great. And my grandmother, his wife, worked there until she was 98 years old.
Holy moly.
Yeah, she died. It's almost a year ago. She died on New Year's Eve, and she was 101. So she was with us for a very long time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really something. It is truly a family business,
it is.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She held court in the Ford showroom for decades.
That's awesome, though. Isn't that? I'm not sure that there are that many family businesses left that you can really point to and say that they had that longevity like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It's when
great.
When I find them, I really do. I get excited meeting third or fourth generation. Sanel Auto Parts, Bobby and David are friends of mine, and they turned 100 last year.
Really?
During the pandemic, unfortunately. So there's not a lot of celebrating, but I still owe them a huge barbecue, because I'm like, as soon as you turn 100, my team's cooking for your team, and then COVID blew it all up. But
yeah.
Soon. Yes. We'll get back.
Yeah, that's another one you can point to, is SANL, another mm-hmm. great organization, yeah. without question. Our guest is Amanda Osmer, and this is In Touch with Kale and Cormier at 1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 FM in the Concord area, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. And our guest today is Amanda Osmer, and we will be right back. Welcome back to In Touch with Kale and Cormier at 1450 AM WKXL, the signal that hasn't been around as long as Grapponi Automotive.
That's been
sure.
around a long time.
We're only 75. We're only
okay.
infants right. compared to Grapponi. 103.9 FM in Concord and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Our guest is Amanda Osmer, and so you've been in the industry a long time. You grew up in the automobile industry. Did you always want to be in the automobile industry?
No, heavens no. No, when I was younger, I never, ever pictured myself doing any of that, honestly. And I worked there as a teenager. You know, I kind of like the summer jobs that I couldn't screw up too badly, although I was fired from being a cashier. I never stole, just to be real clear. I just could not balance a drawer to save my life.
So
and
tell
I still
me the
can.
Truth. Did you resent it?
No. I think I was like, I was in the teenage angst years anyway.
Okay.
There was just too much else swirling. It was just one of the many things going on. You know what I mean?
Okay.
No, my dad and I still joke about it. Yeah. So I never thought that I would get into it. I went to school for humanities, actually. I went to UNH and I got a humanities degree, and German language was my other. Actually, I loved opera music very much, so.
German language?
Yes. Jawohl. So
oh my
I know. So when I fell in love with opera as a high schooler, and then I was like, they're speaking nothing but Italian and German, so I started to learn both just so I could understand what they were saying.
That is so cool.
Turns out, even when you knew like what the words, you can't hear and tell what they're saying anyway. But it was fascinating, and I loved every second. I was an exchange student in Germany. So I thought
what
I had.
Where did you?
The first time I was in Stuttgart, well, near Stuttgart.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And then I was in Berlin for a summer. And then wow. I did a semester in Marburg an der Land. It's a university, Philips University.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Do
so
you
that was
find
my love.
That you retain the language? Because I'll tell you what, I am so horrible. You know, when I lived there,
yeah.
Awesome, right?
Yeah.
No problem. And even with the Italian, you know, going
yeah.
back and forth. I don't know if it's because I'm just getting old, but there are times now when the language,
yeah.
when somebody starts speaking to me,
yeah.
my responses come back in like mixed Italian
oh,
and German.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Brilliant.
Together. Yeah. No, it's not. It's like embarrassing.
As long as it's not English. Well, I remember I was in, when I went to Phillips University, I was there for a semester during my UNH time, and I took Russian language classes, but in German instruction. So I would wake up from dreams like, what happened and what language is that? Well, I've always loved to be able to talk to people in their native language. I don't know what it is. I'm a talker, as you
wow.
both can tell.
That is so cool.
Yeah, so hence, I never thought I would be selling cars. However, being able to communicate with people in their own language is a universal skill, let me tell you.
Yes.
So between humanities and foreign languages and studied music as well.
What did you study?
I was a piano player.
How did I not know all of this? I knew you had an interest in supporting the arts in
yes.
New Hampshire.
Yeah, for sure.
You were good to us, you know, through the years. But I never knew
yeah.
you were actually doing it. So you were a concert pianist?
Oh, heavens no. No. In my mind, I was.
Okay.
So my grandfather, the blueprint, John Grapponi, when I was turned 16, I had older twin sisters who were 18 at that point. So they, because they were twins, had to share a car. Which, because there are two sets of twins in my family and I'm not in them. So I got all my own stuff, which is why I'm a spoiled brat. Code for very independent, but pretty much just a spoiled brat. So when I was about to turn 16, he asked me, would you like a car or a piano? Because his daughter, who they lost, I think that she was without oxygen for too long. And so something happened where she was brain damaged at birth, but could play the piano brilliantly is what I've always heard. I never got to hear her play. She died at age 40, so many, many years ago. So she was a very apparently gifted musician, and my grandfather really wanted me to be a gifted piano player. And so did I, by the way. I'm not terrible. Like, I'm an okay piano player, but I'll never be professional because I do not have the discipline to practice. I get so bored with repetition, which is like the enemy of a professional musician, is if you want to agree, then I'd feel smart. So so I played piano for 11 years at the music school. Concord Community Music
Wonderful.
School. Kathy Dornan, most patient woman on the face of the earth.
Okay.
Oh, man.
She's very kind. Yes.
She is so sweet.
Yes.
Very, very nice. And then I just, throughout college, and I wasn't good enough to keep up with it, but I was, it's just fun for me. Now I play banjo just for fun because I like
good
being able to be musical.
This is so funny.
Who knew?
So,
huh?
Right.
Who knew?
So no, I didn't think I'd get in the car. But when I did, and I ended up, you know, doing a variety of different jobs, and then September 11th happened, and I was working at Groponi at that point, and I still call it my dad's business. But slowly going to start because I am actually buying the Mazda franchise from him at this time. I mean, this week we're supposed to hear from
goodness.
Mazda.
Good luck.
Yes, so dad's and mine.
There you go.
No, I am one of the owners. I just have never thought of myself that way, which is, you know,
that would make
it's
sense.
It's always going to be my dad's and my grandfather's place. So I did like mail running and swap driving for cars at different dealerships and cashiering, and eventually worked my way through all the different positions at the dealership, and then left after September 11th because I was like, I don't even like my job. I could be blown up at any minute. Let's just face it. Let's get real. I'm going to go do something I love. So moved out to the West Coast. I had a friend from college who was in Oakland, so I just drove till I couldn't get any farther. And then lived in San Francisco for 2 years, sold cars at Lexus because nobody in San Francisco wanted to even read my resume because I'm like, I'm not in Podunk, New Hampshire anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't have any connections, and literally nobody called me back. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll apply at a dealership. And the only opening they had was in sales. And I was like, I'd never been in sales because, as we've discussed, it wasn't my favorite place.
But hey, ended up in a good...
It was a very good experience. Yeah. I wouldn't change it for anything. And I really did learn a lot about just what commission-based sales can turn,
can
turn a good person into.
Yeah.
I didn't break any laws.
Mamma mia.
It's so true, though.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, yeah, did that. And then I came back after a couple of years and then got more into the fixed op side, which is service and parts. And then I ran our collision center for a few years. In between, had got married, had three kids.
Just off to the side, right?
And our kids, who are now 14, 15, and 16, and they're awesome human beings.
14, 15, 16.
Yes.
Yikes.
I know.
That was hard, I'm sure.
Come
on, 1 year apart.
Honestly, so the hard part was just, and all parents know this, like, you're a zombie because you just, you don't sleep enough.
You never really got recouped.
No, I didn't. I really didn't. So... was happy to donate those maternity clothes after what felt like a half of my life wearing tents. So my husband, though, was a stay-at-home dad, so that was incredibly helpful.
Yes.
There was no way I could have done what I did without that support.
I was going to say, now, come on, something here.
No, that he's my secret sauce. And now he coaches wrestling up at Winnesquam High School. Yep, he's the best coach in the whole wide world.
I bet.
And I'm always looking for more wrestlers, if anybody out there.
Oh, there you go.
I know, I'm the belly of the beast here in Concord. That's where he wrestled for Concord High. But but he's been trying to grow the Winnesquam program. He's been there 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, terrific.
Good for him.
Yeah, and our kids either wrestle or manage or go to all the practices, and just it's like we're just a wrestling family. So. Yeah.
Do you like professional wrestling?
No. I like real wrestling. Yes. No, I don't like all the acting.
Well,
the
a lot of those wrestlers are going into it now.
Well, I'm sure that's where the money is.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, sure.
But I like the skilled wrestling. You know, that doesn't entail.
Not the showbiz.
Not exactly.
Wrestling,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's an awesome sport.
Yeah. Our guest is Amanda Osmer, and we're talking about her life, which is very fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And talking about Groponi. And we'll talk about other things when we continue on the show, but we have to take one final break on In Touch with Kale and Cormier. You're listening to AM 1450 WKXL, 101.9 FM in Manchester, and 103.9 in the Concord area. We'll take this break, and don't go anywhere. We are back. It is In Touch with Kale and Cormier at AM 1450 WKXL, only 75 years old. 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Our guest is Amanda Osmer, and we know her husband now is the greatest wrestling coach in the world. Maybe the greatest coach, period. Belichick, look out.
Oh, my. Yeah.
But that is terrific, and the family gets involved, too, so that's that is great. That's great. So while we still are on the subject, I guess, of automobiles, which we diverted from a little bit.
We did a little bit, sorry.
But it's okay. It was great. It was great.
I loved it.
That's a risk you take when you invite me into your studio.
Well, I just, next time, bring your guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Banjo.
Banjo.
Didn't you say banjo?
I did.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry. Banjo.
That's okay.
Bring your banjo. Even better.
Yeah.
So let's talk about electric cars and their impact on the automotive world these days.
Well, the hot topic for me right now that I got a call about today is the little bit of frustration, and I can't say I represent everyone. I'll represent myself only. But at this new proposed tax credit for extra $4,500 tax credit if the electric car you buy is produced in a union, American unionized shop. So Toyota, for example, would not be represented in that.
Right.
So it would cost you, in theory, $4,500 more to buy a Toyota than a Ford, for example. So we have both types of dealerships.
Yes.
We have Ford and Toyota and Hyundai and Mazda. So I'm kind of brand agnostic when it comes to policies like that. I'm not a political person. There are a lot of reasons why I choose to not participate in politics, because I just feel, especially right now, it's very difficult to avoid negativity.
Of course.
And I don't like negativity.
And you're a business person.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good recipe there.
Yeah. I need to be able to focus on what's working
and what
we can control. So, I mean, in theory, electric car is great. I drove one here. I'm in a Mach-E, a Ford Mustang Mach-E, which is incredibly fast and very fun. And if whoever's listening is in law enforcement, I'm not telling you how I get home, because
okay.
It is so much fun to drive. It's great. It's 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's a Mustang, but it's an electric Mustang. Okay. Anyway, so I like them in theory. Right now, if we tried, and I keep hearing these stats, like by 2030, Volvo and all these other manufacturers say we're going to be pure electric. Like, if we get to pure electric as fast as people want us to, we will crash the infrastructure. We don't have the ability to charge that many cars. Everybody's going to more or less want to do it at peak hours. And right now, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the different types of charging stations, but in the whole state of New Hampshire, I think, are maybe two DC fast chargers, which allow you to charge. And I've never actually used one of them, but I think you can fully charge in about 45 minutes from like 0 to 100%. However, right now, if you want to charge my Mach-E, you have to do it overnight. It's like a 12-hour
event.
So
how are they going to make that work?
Exactly. Great question, Jane. Perhaps you should run for president.
Yeah.
There are so many factors, and I understand in the spirit, yes, we want to not be dependent on fossil fuels, but lithium that goes into batteries and all of the other precious metals and other things that, you know, the harvesting process for some of these, everything has an environmental impact. I think it's just a little bit short-sighted for us to think that electric is the answer. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great stepping stone.
Yeah.
And for years, Toyota's been saying hybrids are great, you know, because not everybody is set up to be able to have a fully electric vehicle.
Right.
For range purposes,
for right now,
or for not being able to plug it in because you live in a city and you have no access to plugging in, for example. So Toyota has always said, you know, since I've been going to their national dealer meetings, it's kind of a stopgap measure until fuel cells can be made much easier to actually, you know, get out in society. But again, there's no infrastructure.
But they want to put a date on it right now.
Right.
I mean,
right. Right.
You know, that's not helpful.
I understand why people would do that, but I also understand that it's far too nuanced to be able to just slap an end date and then just say, okay, auto manufacturers, now it's your problem.
Yeah.
Go do it. Right. Yeah. There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you said New Hampshire is a good example of that. I mean, there is certainly not the infrastructure here at the moment even a quarter of the population to own electric vehicles, let alone an entire population.
Yeah. Which is, I think, why hybrid's a great option, because, you know, for a little bit of time, if you live close enough to work, in theory, you could not ever have to tap into the gas engine. You could just stick with if you can get a 20-mile range or something, pure electric, to get you to work, and then you can plug in and go home. But that's not the situation for almost anybody.
Not for New Hampshire, for sure, I think.
Yeah.
We drive.
Yes. Yeah, which is why the Take the Wheel program is so important to me, because there's not an infrastructure of mass transit for people who can't afford a car payment. Like, you literally cannot, in some cases, live in New Hampshire if you don't have a car. You got to get food. You got to get to your appointments.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have on this edition of In Touch. But we'll have you back, Amanda, we promise.
Well, I'm right down the road.
Absolutely. In Touch with Cale and Cormier right here. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to you, Amanda, on 1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 FM in Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Thanks for joining us.